Okay, today we are sitting down with Catherine Clematis. Did I say it right?
You did.
Yay! Because you just told me, that's why. And we are in New Orleans. We're in a part of New Orleans.
We're in a suburb of New Orleans.
So we're on the side of a street, so you might hear cars go by, you might hear an airplane, you might hear birds chirping.
Yeah, we're very close to the airport.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I could have just flown.
Yeah.
So my friend Brad had connected me with you actually a couple months ago when I was what I thought was I was coming down here and then I didn't and then I came down here and I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna go through that list of the people. So sporadically contacted you and I'm so glad that you said yes. So I kind of like looked at your Facebook a little bit, but really I don't know anything about you either. So our whole project is just celebrating people that are doing awesome things, and Brad thinks you're a phenomenal person.
Oh boy.
So no expectations or
yeah. No pressure. Thanks, Brad.
Yeah. but yeah. So tell me about you. What is your story?
Okay. Well, I am 32. I am an artist and a graphic designer. Can't see me right now, or unless they're looking at my picture, but I have a genetic bone disease called osteogenesis imperfecta, which is a really long word for basically means that I break bones easily, and they obviously grow abnormally. So for those of you that can't see me, I am a whopping 2'7" tall, and I use an electric wheelchair to get around. I usually have somebody with me all the time. So basically I break bones, like that is my thing. When I was little, I think when I was about 10, my parents stopped counting around 500. So that just gives you an idea of how many bones I've broken.
How many?
A lot. Well, 500 when I was 10. So
holy moly.
A lot after
okay.
That. Yeah. And you know, I can break a bone by coughing or sneezing or moving wrong or, and I will say it's gotten better since I hit puberty, but of course, you know, it still happens and I still have to be careful and all that stuff. But I had two great parents growing up. They are both veterinarians. So I grew up with two parents who each ran their own veterinary practices. So I grew up around animals, a lot of animals and a lot of different kinds of animals, because my dad, his philosophy was, well, if I'm going to have to treat it one day, I want to own it so that I can see how they function. So, I mean, we had dogs and cats. I still have four dogs. But we also had iguanas and geckos and snakes and rabbits and turtles and guinea pigs and birds, a tarantula, which was weird, you know, a bearded dragon. We had all kinds of stuff growing up. So my dad passed away 8 years ago, but my mom does dogs and cats, so now we just have dogs.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I grew up with animals, and my mom was constantly trying to find things for me to do because I was smart and I was bored and I was driving her completely insane.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was 5, she gave me my first watercolor set, and I got kind of hooked on art. It turned out that I was actually pretty good at it, and she enrolled me in, I mean, obviously art at school, but then also summer camps and private lessons, and I mean, I was learning art at a college level when I was 13, privately from a professor. So, so I mean, I had a lot of help, too, but, you know, while my friends were outside playing soccer and baseball and all that stuff, I was doing art, which, you know, I still couldn't go do a lot of things with my friends, but I had something.
Mm-hmm.
I had something to do, which was great. So yeah, that's essentially my story.
Your story.
I mean, I went to college, I graduated.
Where'd you go to school?
Loyola in New Orleans.
Okay.
I graduated with a BA in graphic design. I decided that I originally was going to go for fine art and enrolled in fine art. And then at the end of my freshman year, I realized that the amount of art I would have to produce to be able to even begin to financially support myself was just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, physically, it was just too hard. So I said, well, they have a really good graphic design program, and that's something that's primarily done on a computer. I mean, you know, I do some drawing and stuff for it, too, but most of it is done on the computer. And so, and also, honestly, you make a lot more money as a graphic designer per hour than you do a painter. So I said, well, I'll go ahead and go to school for design. So I have, you know, a degree in design. And then I can still do my art, you know, on the side. And so today I do both.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what are some of these books and projects that you brought into the bus?
So I have two books.
I'm going to
grab first them. One is Looking Up. That is, that's my story. I mean, that's basically everything I'm telling you now and a little bit more. And it's, I have an Etsy store. It's for sale on my website, all that. But it started off as my senior design thesis. So when we were at the beginning of our senior year, our professors said, okay, y'all are each going to have to do a final project. We're not giving you any help as far as what the idea should be. In 2 months, you need to present 3 ideas to us. And the only guidance we're giving you is that it has to be something only you can do. And that was it. Okay. So I don't even remember what my other 2 ideas were, but I presented some ideas to them. And this is what ended up coming out of that. And I was approached by a local publisher after my graduation, and he picked it up, and we, of course, edited it and changed it a little bit, a little more professional,
uh-huh.
And he published it in 2011.
Wow.
So, yeah. So you can keep that one.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. But, yeah, so this that's available amazing. On my website and my Etsy store. And then the other book is Breed All About Us, which actually my neighbor, who I should have called over here to do this with me, my neighbor and I created this a couple years ago.
You drew all these?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I do pet portraits. I do a lot of pet portraits. And because, I mean, you know, when I was a teenager, my parents' clients would ask me to paint their dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was stuck at the office all the time, right? Because, I mean, when I wasn't in school, I had to be with somebody.
Right.
If I didn't have an aide, I had to be at the clinic with my parents. And so I'd have my paints and stuff there. And so their clients would ask me to paint their animals. And then they'd pay me, which is part of why I got hooked, right? As a teenager, when you're making $40 in a day.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty awesome, right?
Right.
Yeah, so I've been doing pet portraits for a very long time. But I get, every once in a while, and for some reason, right before we did this, I started getting these requests more often. I would get requests for just random breeds. Like, do you have a print of a lab? Or do you have a coffee cup with a Boston Terrier on it? Or, you know, whatever. And I don't, because I paint people's pets.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not, you know, I don't take those paintings and put them on products because, you know, they're people's pets. Like, I don't want a painting of a dog that's not my own.
Right.
You know, I just, anyway. So I said, okay, well, I'll paint some of the most popular breeds and then I'll put them on products and then we'll go from there. Well, the plan was to do 8 to 10. That's 64.
There's way more in there.
There's 64 in there. So 8 to 10 very quickly turned into 64. And I have a really good friend who saw the process of it, you know, evolving. And she said, you know, you ought to turn this into a book. And I was like, yeah, but I really don't want to do the work to write a book. I mean, because I wrote the first one,
mm-hmm.
and I know how much work it was, you know. And I was like, it's just not. I just don't want to do it. And my neighbor happens to be a writer. And she was like, well, I'll write it. So she interviewed 2 to 3 dog breed owners for each breed and wrote each little quip from the dog's perspective. So it's really
cute.
Oh,
that's funny.
Yeah, so the dog tells you about itself and they're partnered with my paintings. And it's a fun, cute little book.
Ooh, should we read one?
Sure.
Okay.
I can read one.
Do you have a favorite, or is it like they're just all awesome?
I think they're all good. I mean,
this dude looks pretty rough.
The Chinese president. Yeah.
And like, not roughly drawn, accurately drawn, but that dog, those dogs
are
always
they're
so
a little crazy looking.
The Chinese crested. I come in two different varieties, powder puff and hairless. Either way, I like to look my best with a clean brush coat or well-cared-for skin and a full wardrobe. I'm the perfect model who loves being pampered. I'm playful, devoted, and adore cuddling, especially under the covers. I can be nervous and clingy at times, but loving reassurance will allow my lively personality to sparkle.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to do all 64 of these? That's
a
lot of work.
I actually painted almost every day from April to August and did 64 from April. So four-ish, almost 5 months. Almost 5 months.
How long does it take you to do, like, start to finish one of these? Like, just one?
Yeah, so those paintings are small. They're 4x6. They're a little bit blown up in the book. But, so I think the maximum was 3 days on one. But some of them were 1 day, some of them were 2 days. The majority were probably 2 days. There were a couple that were really hard that, and I just got frustrated and it was like, okay, time to put this one down for a day and mm-hmm. then pick it back up tomorrow and hopefully things work better then.
Right.
You know, and that happens sometimes. But, yeah, it turned out really good. It turned out good. And right now, normally Yvonne and I do book signings and events and, you know, because there's all kinds of dog events, right, that we could do this at.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, none of that has been happening because of COVID. So, we have been doing weekly Breed All About Us live events on Facebook and Instagram. And so, if you follow me on Facebook and Instagram, you can see this. But basically, we pick one breed every week, and we try to have a live version with us of that breed.
And how are you finding all these people?
Well, I mean, my mom's a veterinarian.
Oh,
that's very helpful.
Okay.
I have some of them. I mean, I have 4 dogs in my house.
What do you
have? She has 2 dogs. I have a Papillon Pomeranian mix, which we used for the Pomeranian last week. I have a Coonhound. I have an Italian Greyhound, and I have a Sheltie.
Okay.
I have all different things.
Okay.
They're all rescues. I mean, they've all come from different situations. And anyway, they're all good dogs. They're a little crazy, but they're good. And then she has a Beagle and a Terrier mix also. So,
okay.
I mean, we've obviously used our dogs. We've used friends' dogs. I've randomly called mom's clients and been like, hey, I'm Dr. Segura's daughter. I have a really weird question for you. Can I borrow your dog for like 15 minutes on Monday at 6? You know?
Most people say, heck yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, as long as we can work the schedule out.
Right.
Yeah, it works great. You know, and it's a lot of fun. It's so funny because we never know what's going to happen because
mm-hmm.
it's live and it's with a dog.
Right.
And you just never know.
Like, that's like photography with animals.
Yeah.
It's either really good or, like, not.
It's crazy. I mean, a couple weeks ago we had boxers, and they are such great, goofy, big dogs. And, I mean, Yvonne was on the floor getting licked. I mean, like, they knocked her over. I mean, it was hysterical.
That's one of my favorite breeds is a boxer. I would love to get a dog in here, but between all of this stuff and moving and everything, I haven't done it yet, but I've only, like, a week on the road.
Yeah. You got
it. It might come.
You got time.
Yeah. So, tell me a little bit about you. Like, what are some misconceptions about you or misconceptions about people in wheelchairs or, like, things that you've overcame or, like, I love your personality. You are, like, one bubbly ball.
Thanks.
I love it. And I knew you were an artist. I saw your picture on your profile picture, which is really good as well. And then you just took a picture with the bird. Like, that is like insanely talented.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Misconceptions. Well, so when I'm in public, I mean, I get all kinds of stuff, you know, I mean, I get, oh, look at that cute baby. Oh, she's so precious. I have people who want to pet my head, which is very weird, and it's
like just random people come
random,
up and
random people. Like, it's a personal space thing. It's very weird. I have, I mean, people say things like, you know, slow down or you're going to get a speeding ticket. That's a popular one. And anybody in a wheelchair listening to this is probably going, yep. Because we all get it. Mm-hmm. People think I'm deaf, which I actually do have some hearing loss, but I'm not deaf. And I'm not sure why people equate wheelchair with deafness. I'm not sure. It's very weird. People think I'm not smart. Mm-hmm. People think because I'm in a wheelchair, I'm automatically mentally disabled, which, I mean, I have my days, right? But, I mean, in general, no, that's not, you know, not the case. Mm-hmm. I mean, the other day I went and got my nails done with my friend, and the lady who was doing my nails kept asking my friend what I wanted. And, I mean, I was right there. You know, I mean, that kind of stuff happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because people just assume that I can't speak for myself, which I do, obviously.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, that's frustrating. It's interesting, though, because when I'm around people who have been around people in wheelchairs, like, they get it. It's just, it's people who haven't had that experience yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I do some public speaking, and one of the things I talk about is school inclusion. Because all the kids that I grew up with, they don't do any of those things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they grew up around me. So they know how to be around somebody who's a little bit different. And, you know, they wouldn't even dream of, you know, not talking directly to the person in the wheelchair.
Right.
Because they know better. Because they grew up with it. And it was just normal for them. And, you know, if we could make that happen a little more consistently, that would be very helpful, I'm sure.
What are some things that you would like to positively change or highlight or, you know, in your lifetime, just in general? It doesn't even have to be wheelchair related, but like things that you would like to see change or things that you would like to see as far as inclusion or.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, the inclusion thing, especially in schools. And, you know, I think, and when I say include everyone, I mean everyone as much as possible. So, like, if you have a kid that has a mental disability, they can be included in recess and PE and, you know, whatever other physical activities they can do, right? And where the able-bodied kids are still around them some. And that helps not only them, but it also helps the kid that has the disability,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they learn how to function in, I mean, air quotes, you know, the real world. Right. Because I have a disability. I always knew that, but I never segregated myself away from my friends. And all of my friends were able-bodied. Mm-hmm. None of my friends were in wheelchairs. So, you know, I think that's a huge thing. Access is a huge problem. And it's a huge problem here in New Orleans also.
I was going to say, how do you even get around downtown at all? Like, there's the streets.
Oh, I have
stories
I could tell you about that. But it's too long, and I'm not going to go into that. Mm-hmm. But the sidewalks are terrible. Let's just start there. There's very few ramps. So, like, the French Quarter, for example, it's a historic district. And so the city doesn't want to change anything about the way it looks, which I understand. I mean, I get trying to preserve, you know, the history and the looks and all that. The problem is that there are things that can be done to include people in wheelchairs that don't change the look of a building. So like some of these bars on Bourbon Street have a step up. I mean, I'm sure you know.
Yeah,
that.
I fell off of one.
I'm sure
night.
You did, because most drunk people do.
I didn't. I wasn't drunk.
Okay.
I literally had. No, okay. I really wasn't. I walked out. I was trying to text my friend that I was leaving, and I didn't realize that it's a two.
Yeah.
It's like a 2 foot drop.
Yeah, it's a big step.
Yeah, I ate it.
It's a
completely.
It's a big step. But that being said, instead of building a permanent ramp, there are some ramps on Amazon that you can buy for like $65
mm-hmm.
that fold up, that are aluminum, that they could put down when right. they needed to have it. You know, and they can afford a $65 ramp.
Right.
You know, they just don't. They just don't do it. You know, it's things like that. As I think I told you earlier, I love music, so I go to a lot of live music events. And one of the things I see is that these venues that are built, somebody in a wheelchair obviously did not advise these people
mm-hmm.
about seating in these venues. I'm not gonna name names, but there is one very large arena that I have been to that's not here. It's in another city that is so bad for the handicap seating. First of all, it's like up in the nosebleeds, and the row below the seats is not low enough. So when people stand up in that row, if you're sitting down, you can't mm-hmm. see past them. And I don't have an option. I can't right. stand up behind them.
That was like my, so my friend Amy, she's in a chair, and she, we went to the same church. And I was like, hey, I'll save us seats. And so I was like, hey, I have a friend. She's in a wheelchair. And they sat us in the section. And then everybody, like, stands up to yeah. do the praise music. And I was like, yeah. And she goes, yeah, that's why I don't sit back here. And I'm
exactly.
like, so we moved to the front and they moved a chair. But I'm like, that, like, opened my eyes. And I even messaged, yeah. like, a couple people at the church. I was like, why that makes zero sense.
Yeah, this is why, like, when I go to concerts, I love pit concerts. Because I can usually get the security to let me in first.
Mm-hmm.
I can get a spot by the stage. And I can see the whole show.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. You know? It's hard when seating. Now, there are some venues, like Red Rocks in Colorado. They have wheelchair seating in the front row.
I have yet to go there, and I want to.
It's
on my list.
You should do it. It's something everybody should do at least once. I hope to do it more than once.
Mm-hmm.
My friend and I saw Little Big Town there. We drove 22 hours to see Little. We love Little Big Town.
Nice. I've worked on a couple of photo shoots with them.
Have you? They're wonderful people.
Yeah.
Yeah, they know me. If you said my name, they know who I was. But
nice.
Anyway, they're awesome and insanely talented. And their voices at Red Rocks was like
awesome.
I mean, it was crazy. But, yeah, their seating is great. You know, there's a front row, and if you have more than one person with you, that person has to sit behind you. But that's fine.
Yeah, that's smart. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's totally fine.
So who's, like, a couple of your, like, are you an all, like, you like all different types of music?
I do.
Or you like, are you
pretty
prone to country?
I predominantly like country music.
Okay.
But, I like all different types of music. I love Little Big Town. I love Sugarland. Those are, like, my two.
Nice.
Florida Georgia Line puts on the most fun concert ever. Like, it's so much fun to go
uh-huh.
to a show of theirs. I love Keith Urban. He's crazy talented.
Yeah.
I mean, that guitar is just unbelievable. I love Rod Stewart. I actually got to work with him a couple years ago.
Really?
Yeah. It was really fun. It's a total fluke, but it was super fun, and he's such a nice guy.
Yeah.
And I mean, I grew up listening to what my parents listened to, right? So I listened to a lot of Rod Stewart and Elton John and Fleetwood Mac and Bonnie Raitt and all that.
Your parents sound awesome.
They are.
Between being vets and with music. Oh.
I know. My dad was really into music. My mom is kind of too, but my dad actually played guitar and played music.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. This is exciting.
Yeah.
I love meeting new people because sometimes, like, some of these are, like, I don't want to, like, overly stalk people and then prompt you to tell me questions. Or, like, not just you, but, like, people in general. To where I think a lot of this podcast, like, when you were, like, what's this interview? Are you going to ask me questions? And I'm, like, I don't want to. I'm not the greatest interviewer. And not because I can't, but I'm like, I want people to be able to tell their story from their point of view and their without being like, what am I answering? Because then I feel like I'm just leading somebody into telling their story. But no, I'm very excited that you've been part of this project because
yeah, this is awesome.
It is pretty neat. And I still pinch myself that this is like my life. Like
yeah.
I'm not exactly sure how I'm going to get out of your neighborhood. I think that's a wide turn up there.
It is. Yeah, you should be okay.
Like, when I messaged you, like, three different times of, like, are you sure?
I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, well, my other friends were like, yeah, you can come down. I think it was in Mid-City or somewhere.
No, I was like, all right.
And I'm, like, driving, and I'm like, it wasn't fun. I mean, it was fun, but it was, like, I had to go around the block several times.
Also, there's potholes, like,
everywhere.
Like, potholes you can disappear into.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, I know.
Yeah, he took me to a pothole that had, like, the largest cone I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's a big deal right now. That sewage and water board just put that out.
I was like, I thought he was taking me to, like, a big New Orleans sign or something. Like, here it is. I'm like, oh, my God, that's the largest cone ever.
No, it's a huge thing right now. There was a lady who did, there was street construction going on in her street for exactly a year. Mm-hmm. And she did, like, a birthday party for the street construction. The other day, it was on the news. It was hilarious. I mean, that's
funny.
That's what we do here.
I know. I feel like everybody here has this, like, laid back attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Like people just don't stress majorly about things.
Yeah. I would say that's pretty accurate.
Okay.
And
you like to celebrate a lot.
Oh yeah, that definitely. Anything for a party. And right now it's crawfish season, so.
Anyway, what? Really? Wait, where can I go have some of that?
So
I can actually drive a bus to?
Could you get the bus to Siders? You might. You should be.
Or is there a parking lot, like, near
there's
there
a parking
that I can walk?
Lot. Yeah. Siders. It's in Harahan. It's not that far from here.
Like, S-I-T-H-E?
S-E-I-T-H-E-R. S.
Let's write this down.
Yeah. Their crawfish are awesome. And he actually just came out with a seasoning and a hot sauce that he has patented and is bottling and selling. So that's pretty cool.
Okay.
There's another place called Klessy's, which is
good. That's where I went.
That's where you went?
In
okay.
Mid-City.
Yeah. Siders is probably going to be easier for you to physically get to.
Okay. Yeah, they had catfish, and I didn't put anything on it. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
When I first got here, I contacted Hands On New Orleans to see if they had any events or anything, or like other nonprofits that I could go talk to. And they were like, hey, we're actually doing a fundraiser if you want to come over. I'm like, okay. Cool. So I went, photographed them, and then ate a po' boy.
How long are you here for?
I plan on leaving tomorrow, hoping. I'm supposed to, there's a band. Do you know, Chapel Heart?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Brad wanted me to interview them.
Oh, that's cool.
But they're in Nashville right now.
Oh.
So.
Oh.
And I'm here. So, I was like, they're there until April 1st. And I'm like, if I can get back by the 31st, mm-hmm. I can interview them. And then they leave. And then part of me is like, I could stay down here for like a while. I don't need to be home until the 3rd, per se. Mm-hmm. But I would miss interviewing them.
Interesting characters down here. If you are looking for a nonprofit to interview, the New Orleans Musicians Clinic does a lot of really good work. And you could probably get one of them to interview with you. They do a lot of things, but their main mission is to provide musicians who don't have insurance with medical care. And that's the case with a lot of musicians here.
Right.
They don't have insurance. So,
just the arts in general.
And when I say musicians, I mean, they predominantly musicians, but also culture bearers and service industry workers and Mardi Gras Indians. I mean, they service all of those people.
This may be a dumb question. What is a Mardi Gras Indian?
Oh, goodness gracious. A Mardi Gras Indian is, I mean, it's an Indian. It's the Mardi Gras tribe, so it's...
Can I photograph them?
Yes.
That sounds really interesting.
If you can get them to costume, I don't know. I wonder if I emailed Charisse. I don't know if they will just put on their costumes, because it's a big thing. Like, they make their costumes all year round, and then there's this big reveal on a Sunday before Mardi Gras.
Do they keep their previous costumes?
They do. They keep them. Some of them end up in museums. I mean, but it's amazing. So it's families, and so the traditions are passed down through generations.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a chief and a queen and all that, and it's amazing.
Oh my gosh, this sounds awesome. Yeah, and it sounds very colorful.
They're pretty amazing. And a lot of them sing, and they do drum lines and that kind of stuff. And they come out to a lot of events. Like, they'll be at Jazz Fest, and they'll be at, not just Mardi Gras, they'll be at a lot of other stuff.
Okay. Too. Dang it, never leaving.
No. Yeah. But yeah, but I mean, the Musicians Clinic probably could also hook you up with some of them as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else you want to tell the world?
I don't know. Not really.
Okay.
Come to New Orleans. It's fun. We need to put traffic.
Right now? Well, yeah. Because of COVID and yeah. Everything? Even, yeah. Like, being down on Bourbon, so I guess you guys just went to phase three. Like, you
three
were phase one, 1-5, 9 or 10 or whatever it was.
3 point something. I can't keep up.
So this last weekend, though, was the first weekend where it was, like, open or something. And well, there was people down on Bourbon, but it wasn't nearly like what it's been when I've been there before.
It is open at supposed to be 75% capacity.
Okay.
Now, I have a feeling that that's being somewhat ignored in some places, which, you know, whatever.
I think that's everywhere.
Whatever. Yeah. I mean, at this point, it is what it is. But, yeah, I mean, it's hurt a lot of businesses. It's been really hard. I mean, the musicians alone, like, it's been so hard because they can't play.
Right.
I mean, you know, now they've opened indoor venues with, so if your band has a singer, it has to be 50% capacity. But if the band doesn't have a singer or a wind instrument, it can be 75% capacity. Which to me,
like, they're afraid that it's just going to blow out into the crowd.
I guess, but it seems very arbitrary. Like, those numbers just don't. I don't understand why those numbers. Like, why? But anyway, but then also,
is it like people are going to be singing along?
Yeah. Oh yeah. You're not allowed to sing along, and you're not allowed to get up and dance, and it has to be seated, and it still has to be social distanced and all that. And so, you know, it's kind of like, do they even want to do that?
Right.
I mean, because...
Well, they could do house shows. Like,
So, party, like, home parties have opened up a lot because they're doing a lot of porch concerts.
Right.
I don't know if you've seen that around town, but, you know, bands will just set up on a porch. But, again, it's not like having a full band.
Right.
You know, it's mostly acoustic type.
Yeah, the innovation that has happened in this last year has been pretty...
Yeah.
Phenomenal, but also, like, I'm ready to get back to normal, but I'm ready for a concert.
Oh, I mean, I bought my first set of concert tickets for the year the other day, and I almost cried. I was so happy.
Where are you going?
Thomas Red is in Dallas.
Nice.
So, we're going to go see him there, and then the Cadillac 3 is at the Ryman in September, and I cannot wait for that.
Yeah, that'll be really good.
Awesome.
My last concert was Celine Dion, and it was last January. Not this past January, but January before.
She wouldn't go.
Oh, my God. It's so good. Like, she was so good.
She and I saw Gladys Knight. That was our last concert on March 6th of last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's insane. Okay, well, I'm ready for 2022.
Yeah.
Because I still haven't even gotten vaccinated. I'm trying to. But traveling makes it difficult. And then they were distributing, not to get political or anything like that. I'm not talking about politics on a podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I tried to get the Johnson & Johnson one before I come in here, and they were only distributing it to the homeless, which is totally understandable, and I get it, because that is a population that needs to be served, and they might not be able to come back for the second one. But I was like, I'm technically homeless. I'm like, do I count? And they're like,
define homeless.
No, yeah. I'm like, I'm not really homeless, but I'm like, I'm moving, if that counts. But so I couldn't get it, but I think I can get it next week when I go back.
Good.
All right. Anything else you'd like to say?
I don't think so.
Now, where can people find your artwork?
Oh, so I have a website that's KAK, which is my initials, KAK Art NOLA, NOLA. Like New Orleans, Louisiana, .com. And if you go to my website, you can go to my Etsy store and everything from there. But it has my information about public speaking. It has my blog. It has a lot of examples of my work, pet portraits, how you can get a pet portrait done, that kind of thing.
And it's
KAKARTNOLA.com.
There you are. Yep. Alrighty. And then do you have Instagram or anything like that?
I have an Instagram, and it's also KAKARTNOLA and Facebook as well.
Okay.
Yep.
500 bones, man. Just
kind of
was like the first thing that just popped up when I looked at that. So, man, your artwork is phenomenal. What's your, like, what's kind of like your, like, I don't have a lot of pictures that I keep myself. Like, I have maybe three pictures in this entire thing. What is, like, one that you are so proud of that you've kept?
Well, I still have all the originals of those dogs in that book. And I haven't decided what I'm going to do with them yet. I've considered auctioning them for a rescue.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just not quite ready to part with them. I just haven't quite gotten to that point. I have a painting in my kitchen that I did that is, it's called Identity, like E-Y-E, and then dash, identity. And it's actually 12 square paintings that I put together into one big one, but it's of different animal eyes. And it's really cool. It's what it's, I mean, not to be like, it's really cool, but it's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
And I have not been able to part with that. So, everything else, though, I mean, I'm, you know, I always say, like, art is now my job. Like, it's still my passion, but it's also my job. So, when I'm painting, I'm usually painting with, like, selling that piece in mind, or at least finding a way to sell prints or products made from that painting. Music is my hobby. I mean, that's, you know, everybody says, oh, art's your hobby. No. Art's my job.
Mm-hmm.
Music is definitely my hobby. So, yeah, I mean, when I'm painting, I'm usually starting with the mindset of, okay,
who's gonna
you're not
this?
Keeping this.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to sell this because you need the money.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, when you start off that way, it helps. Sometimes it still fails.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong.
Now, do you have a business manager, too, or do you do everything? Because I feel like that's the hardest part for me. The creative part is challenging. It challenges my mind. But the business side of things, like being able to get it sold and marketed and all those things. Especially you help other people with their marketing, too.
Yeah, and I'm better at doing that for other people than myself, for sure.
Same.
I have two really awesome aides. And they have strengths in different areas. And one of them is incredibly organized when it comes to my stuff. So she keeps, like, my inventory up to date. And she is really good. I do a lot of in-home shows. So I'll bring all of my art to somebody's house, kind of like a Tupperware party, but with my art. And I also design a little bit of jewelry. So with my art and my jewelry. And they invite their friends and, like I said, anything for a party, right?
Right.
So they invite their friends, and we have food and wine, and it's fun. And then they get a cut of what I make at the end, so they can either spend that on product, or I can write them a check, or donate to something in their name, or whatever, however they choose to do that. But she has the organization of packing the van, getting everything in the van, getting everything out, getting everything set up in 2 hours, getting everything broken down an hour.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's her strength. My other aide is a much better creative thinker when it comes to marketing, who to contact, how to market something. She, like, I'll say, how do you do this, this, and this? She's like, just Google it, which I realize should be obvious to me, but
right.
I never think that. So she's a much better, creative is what she does, you know, and it's great because her ideas are, you know, very helpful when it comes to coming up with new products and what I should paint next. And
what are you working on now?
So I'm working on the bird series right now. And actually she's helping me with this. One of the things I'd like to do with it is a show, like a real show at the end of the year. Ideally in a gallery. I don't know if I'm going to be able to nail down a gallery this year or not. We're talking about maybe doing a salon. I'm not sure. I don't really want to do a restaurant. I've done restaurant shows and just, I don't want to do a restaurant. So I'm working on that. I have several pet portraits that I'm working on right now. I just finished one, which you can see on my Instagram. I just finished one the other day and I just started another one. And, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. I don't know. Am I working on anything else? I think, besides my design clients, you know, my regular work.
That bird is what you're working on? Oh, it's pretty.
That's a spoonbill. That's a Louisiana bird. So all of my bird paintings are going to be Louisiana-based birds. So I'm hoping to get a local gallery to pick them up.
Do you do everything left-handed?
Yes.
See, I've always heard that more creative people are left-handed. Oops, I just popped into a live video. Didn't mean to do that. And I'm like, but I'm right-handed. Wait, I can't do that. I can photograph things, but holy crap, that. Looking at a lion, if for anybody that's, I forget that I'm on a podcast, but my God, you are talented. Oh, a sloth. That's awesome. And a gorilla. Good Lord. So many things.
Yeah.
When you were little.
It is. So that was my first dog, Teddy. And that picture is so famous in my family because we look alike.
Your hair and eyes and everything.
I know. Believe me, I've heard it. I know.
Oh, that's funny. All right. Well, I won't keep you all day. I know you have stuff to do, too. So I appreciate you sitting down with me and letting me literally drive up to your driveway.
All good.
I had originally thought about doing a van, but I don't think a van would have fit this and it wouldn't have been as neat.
Way cooler.
Awesome. Now we got to go get your girl and get her in this project, too.
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much. This was awesome. Thank you.